welcome to the Astra Economic Week in Review. My name is John Eckstein. I'm the Chief Investment Officer of Astra Investment Management. I'm joined today by my friend and colleague, Nick Porter. Nick, hello.
Hey, John, how's it going?
Good, how are you? So I think before we jump into the most recent news, let's just take a quick temperature of the economy. And I'm going to say that from my standpoint, the economy still continues to grow quite strongly. And maybe we're seeing a few signs of weakness or growing less strongly than we were, but still in general, a very robust recovery. Do you agree?
Yeah, I don't have anything really to add to that. I think the general characterization is that growth is still strong, but we've sort of seen the peak behind us. And now we have these ongoing questions about supply constraints and price pressures in the economy.
Yep, agreed. So I would say the biggest news of the last, so we were off last week due to unforeseen circumstances, but the biggest news in the last couple of weeks, I would say, is the Fed. We are recording this on Thursday, the 23rd. Yesterday, Wednesday, was the chair's press conference. And so my big takeaway from that is that the dreaded tapering is coming. Why don't you describe what that is, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, the Fed has sort of been talking about tapering for a while now. And what that really means is reducing the pace of Treasury and agency securities, which has been going on really since the beginning of COVID.
So we're still buying $120 billion a month.
That's right. And so, as you probably recall, the Fed has been doing that because interest rates or policy rates are already at the zero low bound. And there's this question about how do we impact the longer end of rates. And the solution that they came up with back in 08 was to buy treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. And so the question over the last two quarters from the Fed has been, or to the Fed has been, when will it be appropriate for the slow, not stop, but slow the purchases of these securities and allow them to roll off their balance sheets as they mature. And I think we finally got an indication of when that's going to happen. My sort of reading is that November is certainly in play. What are your thoughts, John?
Yeah, I think November is like, it's got to be your median expectation now. I suppose some bad, particularly bad numbers could move that date, side that date a little bit, but like it's difficult to imagine like what could actually happen that would convince the Fed that one, their CPI goal is not met or the labor market's not going to return to full employment kind of shortly.
Yeah, John, I mean, it's interesting you say that about these outside risks to the forecast, at least for the U.S. economy. China is certainly on the forefront of everyone's mind these days. Depending on how things play out there, do you think that there could be such an impact that the Fed is forced to delay tapering, or do you think that generally things will continue along the path that they're set on?
I think that's quite unlikely. I'd be extremely surprised to see something happen that would make the Fed change their mind. I think the Fed feels like they might have been a little bit too quiescent on the inflation issue. So like they're probably squinting a little to ensure to say that they've met their full employment part of their conditions, I would say.
Yeah, well, probably not the full employment, but certainly the substantial further progress.
But the progress, I mean, I think we're going to see a few more big ticket labor market reports, but we haven't seen them yet. So we'll see.
Right.
So one more thing to mention about the Fed is that Powell seemed to think that we would be done with tapering by June of next year, which sounds very fast.
That's interesting. So listeners, John didn't prepare me for this question, but just thinking out loud here, it does seem fast. And if I was to think about why he's saying that, it's probably because they really see, or at least the market really sees, tapering not as important for the real economy, but as important for a signal of when policy rates, when the Fed funds rate is actually going to lift, right? And so I would suspect that the chair is doing that, or the FOMC is doing that, really as a signaling mechanism about when they're going to start thinking about moving towards the first real rate hike.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't think of that. So just to recap, so the Fed has said both the last time it tapered and in the last several months that it's not going to raise rates until it's done with its tapering, right? Mm-hmm. So if the Fed's like, gosh, if we might need to raise rates next year, we got to get those treasuries off the books or get them, stop putting new ones on the books anyway, and then start preparing the market. So that could be a signal of rate hikes next year. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of the tail wagging the dog in that sense, but I think it's certainly plausible. Otherwise, the time frame, you're right, does seem a little bit accelerated.
It's only accelerated compared to the last couple times they did it.
Right.
And another thing I was kicking around with some people today is that, do you think that the Fed is sort of done this cycle, right? Are we going to get back to something like normal? Is the Fed, are you completely convinced that we're not going to be buying any treasuries in June 2023, for example, and that rates will be more or less normalizing? Because I guess I'm wondering, in a lot of ways, we weren't able to get back to normal in the whole last recovery. Sure, rates got up to 2% or something like that, but the Fed never met its inflation target over that whole period. The gains to the labor market were crushingly slow. There was also problems in the repo market in 2019 before the pandemic, and the treasury market had a very bad early part of the pandemic too, right? Like, sort of forgotten that, but that was almost really bad. Any thoughts on getting back to normal?
Yeah, I mean, we sort of segue the conversation, I think, appropriately into what was really the question on everyone's mind in earlier 2020 before the pandemic, which is really the story of secular disinflation and a permanently lower R-star or neutral rate of interest. And there's probably reasons about why this might be. People talk about demographics and savings and inequality and things of that nature. And I think those underlying trends, whichever one you might happen to believe, probably haven't changed post-pandemic. So if we do see economic normalization, there's probably a good reason to think that our star is permanently lower. We're not really going to see the Fed have this chance to move into a 4% or 5% hiking cycle.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. But that does bring up inflation. So the CPI was a little bit better this month. Do you want to go through that?
Yeah, sure. So August CPI, surprise to the downside. So core CPI, meaning excluding food and energy, was at 4% year over year. That's just 0.1% month over month. And generally, it's sort of considered that could continue this deceleration in prices that we've seen since June. One of the things that we've been tracking and others have been tracking quite closely are these quote-unquote reopening categories. You've heard about used car prices and airfares and lodging and hospitality. And some of those have cooled substantially. The rate of growth has slowed. And in others, including used cars, prices have begun outright declines. And that sort of suggests that these reopening specific price pressures are well behind us. So that's sort of the good news on the is inflation transitory or not front. The other piece of good news is that market-based measures of inflation, like the five-year, or TIPS, are all pointing to this 2.3% range over the medium term. So that suggests that the market thinks that inflation is pretty well contained as well, even as we've seen the numbers sort of decline. But there's also this bad story, or this non-transitory story, I should say, that suggests that inflation is going to be higher and higher for longer. The market participant expectation is for contained inflation, but there's other ways of looking at inflation expectations. And one of those is the New York Fed Survey of Consumer Expectations, which, as you might surmise, asks consumers, so you and me, about our inflation expectations over the next 3 years. And that level is quite a bit higher. Consumers see it at 4%. Now, as we know, inflation expectations from a market perspective tend to track realized inflation quite poorly. In fact, they tend to be a little too high. So there isn't all this great reason to think that consumers are much more accurate. But if you think that inflation is some function of inflation expectations, you might be a little bit concerned about that. The other piece of news that suggests that inflation might not be as transitory is to look at the median CPI. So if you sort of cut off the tails of the CPI basket and look at the median increase of a price of a good, the Cleveland Fed does that, and their measure of median CPI is at its highest in 15 years. So I guess to sum up, fairly compelling data points on both sides of the argument on the transitory versus non-transitory. And John, I'd be interested to see, with the cooler core CPI print that we've seen recently, which side of the fence are you landing on these days?
Yeah, so I mean, I think we discussed a few weeks ago, like what our definition of transitory was stretching out further and further. And I guess I'm still there. One thing that's interesting is that some people have been making what they were calling core CPI, which was breaking out the reopening versus non-reopening. And as you pointed out, the reopening stuff, airfares and used cars, were actually down month on month in August. But the other stuff was up month on month quite strongly. And so also, you know, we're still seeing the labor market resettle. And you got to think that some higher wages have got to be part of that package to lure people back into jobs that are open, but not being filled. So I guess I would see another year of above average inflation.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And you bring up this really good point about sort of these stickier components of inflation. So used cars and airfare, who cares? They normalize in a quarter or two, but rent and wages are sort of the, I think, the next wave of things that are really going to contribute to CPI. And we haven't really seen the worst of those yet.
Yeah, and you're right that the consumer service inflation expectations, which are always way too high, are even higher. But the other thing is that, like, the last time they spiked this high was 2008. And we're not talking about, like, the great inflation of 2009, right? Like, that was just, like, the consumer inflation expectations are super highly tied to the price of gasoline and, like, the price of milk and, like, just a couple of things, which are important, right? Like, it's not like you don't have to drive, but they're not as important in forecasting the rate of inflation in the future. So when I was on with Rob, we were talking about this somewhat disappointing payroll number a couple of weeks ago. That was the number for August as well. Since then, we've had one thing I just want to point out is that we had a very, very strong retail sales number. And the retail sales is subject to some revisions, but we actually had 2.5% growth rather than the expected zero growth of the prior month's negative growth. And if you look at the level of retail sales, so stepping away from the change and sort of looking at the level, it's still far above where sort of the trend line that you drew from 2017, 2018, 2019, our level of retail sales overall is well above that level. So that part of the economy, I think, is definitely continues to be quite robust. Okay, Nick, I think we'll leave it there. If you would like more information about how we view the economy, you can check the Aster website, asterim.com. That's Aster for asterinvestmentmanagement.com. You can download the Aster Research app. You can reach out to your Aster sales representative. We've got blogs and apps and charts galore waiting for you. And we'll see you next week. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, John.
To learn more about Aster Investment Management's research and strategies, please visit us on the web at www.asterim.com or stay up to date by following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and our app is also available on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you. Aster Investment Management, LLC, is a SEC-registered investment advisor. All information contained herein is for informational purposes only. This is not a solicitation to offer investment advice or services in any state where to do so would be unlawful. Analysis and research are provided for informational purposes only, not for trading or investing purposes. All opinions expressed are as of the date of publication and subject to change. They are not intended as investment recommendations.